Well, Florida is now the largest state to formally declare that it will turn down the Medicaid expansion program under President Obama's Affordable Health Care Act. The Supreme Court ruling last week allowed states to opt out without being penalized. Here's what Florida Governor Rick Scott said yesterday when asked on Fox News about the fact that the federal government would pay the full cost of the expansion for the first 3 years.
It's not free. It's $1.9 billion a year.
Right.
You're still paying it. They're only going to cover all of it in the first 3 years. Then Florida taxpayers are going to be on the hook.
Well, PolitiFact rated that statement false. While the federal government will gradually shift costs to the state, that will never go above 10%. And so the most Florida will pay will be about $500 million a year starting in 2020. Still, that's a lot of money to some states that are still balking at the expansion. Republican governors in Louisiana and Wisconsin say they'll also opt out of the expansion and will refuse to set up health insurance exchanges in their states. So what will this mean for the law's plan to insure 30 million Americans? How is the Medicaid expansion supposed to work? What happens with all that money? Stuart Altman has been advising presidents since Richard Nixon on health care. He's now a professor of health policy at Brandeis University's Heller School, and his latest book is Power, Politics, and Universal Health Care, the inside story of a century-long battle. He's here to tell us about all of that. Professor Altman, Stuart, welcome.
Well, thank you so much.
And as always, when we talk Medicaid, we have to make the distinction. Medicare is for the elderly, Medicaid for the very poor, and the state and federal governments share the cost. And we know that actually much of Medicaid is spent on the elderly who are poor. Have I got that about right?
You got it all right.
Okay. So the expansion was supposed to cover 17 million more people, expanding the criteria of who's eligible to anyone making 133% of the poverty line. We have to explain again. The poverty line is about $9,000 a year for individuals. So that would go up to about $13,000 a year. You could qualify if you were in there. Families of three making $25,000 a year would now be eligible for this Medicaid expansion. But it's not just that it expands it. It also seems to give it a firmer definition. How was Medicaid allotted before?
Well, when the program was started in 1967, there was a basic benefit package that every state had to provide if they were going to be in the program, and the federal government would match from 50 to 75% of the cost, depending upon the income of the state. So poor states would get more money than the wealthier states. And then in addition, states could add on additional benefits that they and the federal government would match it. The other issue, which is particularly important for this, is that while there was a requirement for certain kinds of individuals, young mothers and children, to be on the program, the states had the authority to decide where they would draw the line in terms of who was eligible. And using that poverty line, they could do it at 60% of poverty, 70% of poverty. Or the federal government allowed some states, like Massachusetts, to go above the poverty line.
Well, and in Florida, we understand childless adults can't receive Medicaid. And parents who have children have to make less than 22% of the federal poverty level to receive Medicaid. As I said, the expansion is raising it from the poverty level. But in Florida, a single parent of one child would have to make less than $3,500 a year to qualify for Medicaid in Florida. So that bar is, I mean, that really excludes a lot of people. This expansion would have then added a lot of people to the rolls in Florida. So does the governor have a point? You know, states are looking down the road and they're saying, you know, he had the wrong number by a long shot, but it is still going to be, you know, millions of dollars down the road for the state to now cover far more than, for instance, in Florida they ever did. Do they have a point?
Well, they do have some point. I mean, it will eventually cost them a few dollars, but let's repeat what you said, Robin, and that is for the first 3 years, the federal government pays all of it, all of the additional costs, and even as it moves forward, the most they would have to pay is 10%. And remember where the money's going. The money is going to, in many respects, pay back to hospitals and doctors for care that they're already giving to these people and doing it for nothing. So these hospitals and doctors provide free care.
Okay, so a little bit of a maybe editorial comment here. I'm thinking in Florida in particular, if you only cover, you know, a parent and a child who make less than $3,000, wow, a lot of people are going to emergency rooms in Florida, I'm guessing.
Absolutely. And not only that, when they get very sick and they wind up on the doorstep of the major hospitals in Florida or in Texas, they get a substantial amount of expensive care for free.
Okay, so people who are backing this expansion are making that point that in the long run, you spend less because you are going to have healthier people. But what does it mean that now this Supreme Court ruling has allowed these governors to opt out? Obviously, the way it works with insurance, with any kind of insurance, whether it's Medicaid or a private company, the more people who are in and the more the state, is covering. Well, actually, that doesn't work, does it? No, it doesn't work. Well, it means that more are covered. No, it does work because the more people who are covered, the fewer people who are going into emergency rooms and raising costs there. So what does it mean for those 17 million Americans who were supposed to be covered by this expansion? What do they do?
Well, first of all, it's as you pointed out, they're going to continue to do what they are doing, which they do without, and they mostly do without when it comes to primary care. And then when they do get sick, they're going to go to the emergency department. The experience suggests that even when they get Medicaid, they still go to the emergency department, unfortunately. But they're going to do what they're doing now, and unfortunately, a lot of them go without care.
No options, because these are people who are making a little bit more than the expansion in most states, but far too little to pay for private insurance themselves. Their employers don't have insurance. These are the people we're talking about. We're talking with Stuart Altman. Again, he's advised presidents from Nixon to Obama on healthcare reform. More about Medicaid expansion with Professor Altman in 1 minute here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to our look at some of the fallout from last week's Supreme Court ruling on Affordable Care Act, specifically the Medicaid expansion element, the Supreme Court ruling that states can opt out of that expansion requirement. Yesterday, Governor Scott of Florida did just that, formally announcing his state would not expand Medicaid and also would not have the so-called health exchanges. We're talking with Stuart Altman, a presidential advisor, also professor of health policy at Brandeis University's Heller School. Professor Altman, pick up there. We talked about how Florida's roughly 4 million people who don't have health insurance. We may be completely out without having the Medicaid expansion. But there are also these exchanges and the possibility of subsidies. Now, the Medicaid expansion was going to give subsidies to people who are at 4 times the poverty line, as opposed to people at 133% of the poverty line who'd be qualified for the Medicaid expansion. What would those subsidies do?
Well, two things. Let me say first, Robin, the political posturing that's going on now was similar to the political posturing after we passed Medicaid. So you have to separate the short run and the long run. Short run, you're going to find a lot of governors making all this kind of political noise. But the reality is that over time, we expect very few of the states not to take this on. There will be a few. It took Arizona about 20 years to finally come into Medicaid.
Well, as you point out, it's, because the point is to make people healthier so that your health care costs go down.
Well, not only that. I mean, the hospitals stand to lose millions of dollars, and so do corporations who wind up paying higher premiums. So, there's going to be another election in Florida, and this governor is going to have to pay the price of denying his state, not only to the people that get the care, but also the people that are paying extra premiums.
But as you know, we're going to pick up on this. I want to just explain subsidies first, but we're going to pick up on the fact that we hear people saying they still feel it's the government forcing them to do something. So I want to pick up on that. But first, these subsidies to people who make about $90,000 a year for a family of four, again, too much income to qualify for the Medicaid expansion, but maybe their company doesn't offer them insurance. What happens to these people who get the subsidies but don't have exchanges to go to? How does that work?
Well, first of all, the exchanges are either going to be done by the states or the federal government. So the exchanges are going to be set up in every state.
And they
what they are basically, some people think of them like Travelocity for healthcare. They're a simple way that people can buy insurance. We have here in Massachusetts the Connector. So you can buy it either online, or it simplifies the purchase of insurance.
And they compete for you.
And insurance companies have to specify how much they're they're going to charge for a defined benefit. Now, the way the subsidies work is that the lower your income, beginning at the poverty line, if you're at the poverty line, the subsidy will pay almost all of the insurance. As you get up towards the top of the line that you talked about, the subsidies are quite limited. So don't have your listeners panic and say, people are making $80,000. They're going to get health insurance for free. Not true at all. They're going to get a small subsidy at the upper end. The important thing to remember for the, and they're going to be set up through these exchanges, the states can operate their own if they want, but if they don't do it, the law requires the federal government to do it. So there will be an exchange in every state, regardless of what Rick Scott says.
Well, let's pick up, though, on the thing that you mentioned, that you know he has his supporters who feel that government should not impose cost on citizens. And we were reading articles, you and I were talking before we came on the air, articles last week about a couple in Oregon, for instance, terrible health care problems, cancer. Not enough income, too much for Medicaid, but not enough to buy insurance. They actually got some health care because of one aspect of the health care law. But even then, ended up saying how they thought, their interpretation of what they thought of as Obamacare was the government was going to force them, this very low-income couple, to buy insurance. They had no idea that there was a Medicaid expansion, that there were subsidies. They had no idea there were these safety nets. Did the Obama administration do a good enough job explaining this?
I think the answer is no, they did not. But bear in mind, this is a very complicated law, and but the Obama administration allowed their critics to take control over the volume of the education, and of course, the critics distorted the education. I wouldn't exactly say lied, but they came pretty close in many cases. So well-meaning people who were seniors, for example, more seniors were against this bill because they thought somehow Medicare would be in worse shape. But of course it wasn't. And this bill does a lot of, this law does a lot of very good things for seniors. But yet the distortions implied that this would be worse for Medicare. I've gone around the country talking to senior groups all the time, and I'm constantly having to reinterpret what they believe the law was in the law.
Well, I just have a couple minutes left here, but you who have seen decades of this debate, starting with Medicaid and working with President Richard Nixon, you spoke to Farrah Stockman of the Boston Globe recently, and it's a fascinating story about how Richard Nixon actually was trying to get some form of universal health care because two of his brothers had died young because they had no health care. He wanted a program something similar to President Obama's, only he would require companies to buy insurance. And you worked hand in hand with him and Ted Kennedy.
Yes, that's true. Richard Nixon, who is not always the most loved president in America, actually, in many respects, was quite a liberal president. And he put forth a bill and almost got it passed that actually, in some respects, was more liberal than the Obama plan. And interestingly enough, Senator Kennedy, who had been arguing very strongly for a single-payer system, in secret had his people meet with me and others to try to see if we could draft a bill that all of us could agree on. And we came very close. And then we had the Watergate, and we had a situation where the powerful member, the head of the Ways and Means Committee, Wilbur Mills, got into trouble with Fannie Fox.
Some little girl in a fountain, a woman
exactly.
in a fountain down in Washington,
exactly.
D.C.
Exactly, and it all went away.
So the scandals wiped out.
The scandals wiped it out in '74, and we didn't get to debate it again until Bill Clinton came in the early 90s.
Well, Stuart Altman, we'll have to have you back on other aspects of the health care reform debate currently. Again, he's advised presidents from Nixon to Obama. He's a professor at Brandeis. His latest book, Power, Politics, and Universal Healthcare, The Inside Story of a Century-Long Battle. Hope we answered some questions today about Medicaid expansion. Stuart, thanks so much.
It's always a pleasure, Robin.
Take a quick break. Back with the latest news here and now.
Support for Here and Now comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced, by Harvard University, whose Harvard Extension School has online and on-campus courses for students around the world, extension.harvard.edu, and by the Institute of Contemporary Art, featuring the glass sculptures of Josiah McElhaney, on view now through October 14th, icaboston.org.